Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sarah Phelps and I'm completely fucking fabulous.
Yes! We're starting the podcast episode with us.
Can you hear?
This is TV Worth Talking About. Shrine Podcasts presents Dublin Murders.
Hello and welcome to Shrine Podcasts presents Dublin Murders, the post-mortem. I can't take credit for that, Brendan. Well done.
Brendan, it's brilliant.
It's like the only title that I've come up with in all the podcasts we've ever done.
It's written down on the page here and it keeps making me laugh. It's so good.
We are going to be chatting to some of the cast members of Dublin Murders this evening, this morning, depending on when you're listening to it.
We haven't rang any of them yet, so we probably shouldn't commit to any names just in case.
In case they don't pick up the phone.
Yeah. I'm surprised anyone even gave us their numbers.
Imagine we were ghosted.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Guys, what have you all been doing in the last week? Can you believe it's only been 7 days-ish since the series finished?
Yeah. I watched Gavin and Stacey, episode one, up all Christmas specials, making ofs, the whole thing, down to the last episode of season 3 in about 2 days.
Is that your first time watching it?
Yeah, I'm reading things in a Welsh accent now.
Like, it is my favourite. You know the way people watch Friends on loop?
Yeah, you said that was your thing.
Gavin and Stacey is, I watch it all day, every day.
That's how I feel about Sherlock. And when you said that to me and my sister, we have the exact same sense of humour. She was like, how have you never watched Gavin and Stacey? Mm. We need to be able to watch the Christmas special together this year.
Yeah.
We like all the same things. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Put on one episode. It's all my favourite music. Gav's gorgeous. Stacey's adorable. I'm laughing. I'm crying. So that's what I did for the last
Pam
week.
Shipman Pam Shipman is the best TV character that's ever so been
written. Is she the one that says,
ever?
Oh my Christ?
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to watch it. Brendan said, you've been telling me for years. No. He's like, you need to watch Gavin and Stacey. It's like the way I watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch all the time.
Yeah, that is.
He watches Gavin and Stacey.
Pam Shipman is the best TV character ever written.
No, come here, Nessa. I know Anessa and I cannot stop laughing about it.
I haven't watched it, so I'm like smiling and nodding, but I will watch it ahead of the Christmas special.
Very excited for the Christmas
special. I've been watching Marcella season 2.
Ooh, Marcella.
Ooh, I need to get into that now.
Every time she comes on the TV, my fella's like, ooh, Marcella.
How did we even start that?
You said it one day, Brendan, and we all thought it was fun to say.
Yeah, we just stuck with, ooh, Marcella.
She doesn't even have that accent.
No, she doesn't have that accent. Like a coronation.
So I'm watching that, and then I will watch Gavin and Stacey. I need something a bit lighthearted because it's quite heavy.
Oh, please, in the WhatsApp group, update us as you're going along with Marcella, because
I'm going to watch it again.
Oh, same.
I'm
going to
do two Marcellas and a Gavin and Stacey. Two Marcellas and a Gavin and Stacey. Just so I don't get too
That's
upset.
The way I go through the Quality Street tin. I'm like, oh, I'll have a chocolate, I'll have an orange and a strawberry, and then I'll go and have a purple one.
Orange and strawberry are my ones, Brendan.
And then I just
rotate them. What flavour is Marcella?
She'd be the green. She's always wearing a green jacket, green hues in the artwork.
Yeah.
She's a green triangle.
I was going to say the triangle.
Although there's a new one this year and I only got a box last week. It is, it's like a lump. It's dark green and it is
described so
it's well. A lump.
It's a lump and it's a chocolate toffee, like caramel but with coffee flavour.
Oh.
Yeah, so maybe she'd be that one because she's a bit dark.
Yeah, and you don't want the coffee surprise at the end.
No, it didn't work for them. No. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm more of a celebrations gal myself.
The Maltese one is good. Anyway.
God, how did we get there?
It just happens. We don't even mean it. Do you know, we got actually a huge reaction to the biscuit
debate
in the middle of the it was real tense.
And by
moments.
Huge reaction, do we mean four tweets?
Four people saying, oh, some people were saying they were with you, Brendan, about the fig rolls. I couldn't believe it.
Well, thanks so much. How did they get the figs in?
No, please, the fig rolls. Oh, just have more respect
for
yourself.
They might inject it the way they inject the jam into a donut.
I won't have this conversation.
That was their whole marketing campaign for a while. How did they get the figs into the fig roll?
Well, it obviously worked because here we are. So first up, we are going to be chatting to writer extraordinaire Sarah Phelps.
Oh my
so
God.
So excited. I can't wait. Now, we did promise her that we'd have a vodka for her, but we're in different countries, so I hope she's poured one for herself.
Yeah, or else we can see if she's near a bar and we can send one over. We'll figure it out.
Or we can wrangle ourselves an invite on the set of season two and then she can have a vodka.
Absolutely.
We need her to confirm it on the podcast first.
Imagine our very first exclusive.
Hello. Can you all hear me?
I can hear you now.
But can
calling
you hear
London.
Perfect. Sarah, we're so excited to talk to you.
Oh, you darlings. I love your fucking podcast. It's just a joy. It just makes me hope. And you've been such champions. Thank you so much. It's been the great joy has been like switching on a Wednesday and going, theories, inject them into my veins. Give me the theories. So good.
Well, thank you for writing such amazing television.
Oh, cheers.
That was so nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm welling up here.
Same.
So, Sarah, first up, we have to ask you, what was it like combining two books together?
Right, in all honesty, I think I've kept them together. And then you go, okay, I've said that. And everyone's gone, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Now I've got to go and kind of make it work. So the building blocks of it were tricky, to say the least. But the principle of it, I think, was right, that Rob and Cassie were neck and neck throughout, rather than it being Rob and then you've got to catch up with Cassie and she would be, in televisual terms, a sort of bystander. Somebody who watched rather than was active. So it meant changing some of her story so that, like, she was in the car with her parents and a stag came through the car and she kind of invented Lexi out of that. But it meant that even though it was a real head fuck, I was kind of driven on by the fact that I just thought it was really good for the series. To make them so entwined.
And did you ever meet Tana French? Was she involved? I know she kind of signed the rights over, but was there any kind of meet up between you two? Did you hash out
absolutely.
Ideas?
We went out and met up twice. So we went over and had dinner with her and just did a kind of initial meet up, a nice little where she got to actually look the person who was going to be working on her books in the face. And we went and had dinner and I kind of waved my arms around in a really excited way and shouted about fairy tales and tables, because I got really obsessed with the fact that there are tables and that tables are central to all of Tana's books. Like, you've got the altar in the woods, you've got the table that the students sit around, and then you've got the pub table in Faithful Place and the family kitchen table in Broken Harbour. And I just started ranting and raving about that. And I think she was probably went, yes, that's fine, do what you want, just so she could get away. But we went out and had, when the project got greenlit and we were further underway, we went and had lunch in Dublin again and just sort of talked more about the development and where it was going. And she, because she said she'd always thought of the books as being a pair, that they are very distinct kind of couplings, and that it felt quite a natural thing to plait the books together rather than do one book and then the next book, that actually tangling them up, you know, it didn't feel forced, it felt quite organic. But she was writing The Witch Home at the same time. I think that she, and exactly, and so I think she was, I was really lucky because she was generous enough to sort of step back and go, an adaptation for TV is totally different from a novel. And they are. They're totally, totally different experiences. So she kind of stepped back to concentrate on Witcher and concentrate on what she wanted to write next and just sort of, you know, let us run. It was that was incredibly generous of her.
Sarah, and when you finished tangling them up, as you put it, do you just hand over the script then to directors and producers and everyone, or are you involved? Like, were you on set for filming?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm completely involved from the word go. I mean, it's so that when we got like sort of directors involved, they got involved when I had scripts to kind of show them. So we were already talking about the script, the show, and what it would look like with Saul Dibb, and how to create the world of the woods, and how we were going to find different locations so that we could really have that sense of this huge place. So that there were different little bits of woods for different sort of atmospheres that we kind of melded together to make one big world. So yeah, all the time, and on set, and in casting, and with production, and looking at all the, I mean, because that's my job, because a lot of the time you're going to say, I've had this really brilliant idea, and a spaceship comes down, and this comes out, and then there's a bear, and you're like, yeah, that sounds brilliant, but unfortunately it costs a fucking fortune, so rewrite it so it makes more sense. And he goes, okay, so that's your job always, is to not just, you know, have all these sort of mad ideas in a script and hand it over and go, now make it work. My job is also to kind of answer questions. So if you've kind of hit the skids a little bit in terms of the budget, or in terms of locations, or in terms of weather, or in, there's all sorts of things that can happen on a set. My job is to go, that's not a problem, I'll just switch that, change that, put that over there, and turn that upside down, and it will all be fine.
That's a really cool way to work.
It is, definitely. And Sarah, there was...
It's really important, because you've got to be involved. And also, I mean, this is the inside of my head, so I've got to put my face about so you know. And also, it's my baby, so I always like to feel like I'm the kind of writer who, you know, you get the very best people, and seriously, like the crew and the cast, I mean, and the whole production team, people at the top of their game, at the very, very height of their craft, just amazing. So you get these incredible people, and you trust them to do the very best job. And I never like to think that I'm sat there breathing down a director's neck or down a designer's neck or whatever. But I do like to be there, so that if someone says, well, there's that bit, it's not a problem. And also so that the actors, you know, I can chat to the actors. And also I like going out for dinner and having drinks.
Don't we all?
Oh, yeah.
And Sarah, there are so many amazing characters in the TV show. Who is your favourite to write?
Oh, now that's a real tough one. That is really tough, because they were all meant such a lot. But I love writing Cassie, and I love writing Rob, because they were so present, and you were so in part of their interior landscape. I also really, this is going to sound bizarre, but I really like the kind of some of the really smaller characters. So I'll tell you who I absolutely adore is Alana, who you first see.
Yes, she's brilliant.
And she's the one that Rob says to her, you're lower than shit. And she bursts into tears and gives up her boyfriend. And then you see her again when she's been attacked and had all her hair sliced off.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that pivots Sam and Cassie's relationship. That's the thing that just sends, you know, Cassie spiraling off into the outer darkness. And it also means you get to see some real fire from Sam when he goes, I don't care if his granny was born in the shed out west, he's still English. You know, and then you see her again when Cassie's undercover, and she's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So, and also stories like that are really important to me. The kind of untold ones, the kind of people who, you know, eyes slide off them. Nobody really sees an Alana unless it's the Flagger off. Nobody sees the own, and Sandra. You know, everybody talks about her. Everybody talks about her. Not one person asks her. And so the characters like that mattered to me so, so much. Like when everybody's, oh, like Sandra, we whore like a mother. You know, the Magdalens would have taken and sorted her out her nonsense. But nobody's ever said to her, are you all right? What's going on? Who are you? What happened? So all of those people, they mattered a huge amount, because they're like the, I don't know, you know, I always think of music when I'm writing, like a big orchestra, and you're conducting an orchestra of voices. And those, you know, the smaller characters are the kind of these little notes, and you can spin a scene on those little tiny minor notes, and I just think they say volumes.
Well, absolutely. Really, for such peripheral characters, especially Alana, like, she definitely struck a chord to everyone.
Yeah.
Like, there's some scenes with her in them that I'll never forget. So that comes down to the writing and the acting.
It's just brutal. Just brutal. Imagine seeing a poor, a pregnant girl like that and just going to, there's no fairy tale. Nothing's ever going to go right for you. And you're lower than shit. So it was just a way of saying, like, what? Robin, Cassie, they really know each other. They're really good at their job. But I'll tell you something else. They're cruel.
Yeah, there's a dark streak in them. And
There's a little edge of cruelty to them. Yeah. You know, she'll bring her tissues and a cup of tea and they'll just make, they'll make sure that some other agency takes over her care. But actually, they got a result. And it's just that little exclusivity about their characters, which speaks to you about the sort of relationship that they have, that it's actually a dangerous relationship.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And one of the things we were kind of joking about the whole time on the podcast is the Dublin and the real Irish colloquialisms throughout the whole show. And obviously, English. All your work has been quite English. The Shakespeare, the Agatha Christie, the EastEnders. Do you have this Dublin friend that's given you all the insider knowledge, all the lingo? Or how did you do your research?
Well, here's the thing. So I've got a pal, but my pals, I've got pals from Belfast, got pals from Galway, whatever, but not a Dublin thing. But here's the thing. If you're English, you've grown up listening to the most astonishing Irish voices and the most astonishing Irish performers. Grown up listening to Irish music, either it's, you know, punk or rock or whatever, Irish poetry, reading Irish literature, watching Irish comedians, watching the great, great Irish actors. So I couldn't do an Irish accent if you put a gun to my head, and I wouldn't even begin to dare to try. But what I was really aware of all the time is that there's a rhythm, and it's a very distinct rhythm as opposed to the way an English person speaks or the way a Scottish person speaks or Welsh or American or whatever. There's a really distinct rhythm. And I just had that rhythm kind of running in my ear. I sound like I'm mad, honestly. But it was like a bit like the way O'Kelly speaks, for example.
He's so funny.
It's just it's like huge and explosive. And even though it's huge, it's distinct from, say, Quigley or from Sam or from Sandra or from Mrs. Fitz or from anybody in the Devlin household, there's still a rhythm. And the rhythm is different to your English, to an English rhythm. So I just listen to that rhythm. And like sometimes on set, and John Hayes, our director of episodes 3, 4, 7, and 8, John Hayes is from Dublin. And I was always expecting people to say, like, on every line, that's bullshit. No Irish person would talk like this. But it hardly ever came in. Only, I think, Peter MacDonald said once, can I switch the arrangement of this sentence around just because it's more truthful to a Dublin mouth, if that makes sense? And Sarah Green said, and again, can I just switch the arrangement of this sentence? Yeah, that's absolutely fine. And then I think it was Hayes who came up with the phrase dry shite.
So good.
That is a Dublin phrase.
But John was really delighted because it's just like when Sandra says about Mrs. Fitzgerald, good Catholic woman, Nagash, and he was just like, oh God, yeah, I can't wait to direct that.
we're crying at that.
It's a thing. It's like, how do you say something really obscene without saying the obscene thing? And I was on EastEnders for years where you can hardly say anything. And I still managed to get hate mail. So, you know.
Well done, you.
I know, I'm so proud. It's nothing like people thinking they've heard something truly disgusting. And they haven't. It's really interesting how suggestible. But anyway, so yeah, I just, you know, I'm just trying to think, like, you know, you go to Edinburgh and it'd be full of Irish comedians. And I used to work in a comedy club in South London, and he's amazing, amazing Irish comedian. And you just absorb the rhythm of that and absorb all those great Irish voices that we grew up with. Because, you know, I mean, I'm old. So I grew up listening, you know, if Gerry Adams on the TV, you wouldn't hear the voice. It would be the voice of an actor.
Come here, Sarah. Season 2, surely it's in the bag.
I wish.
It's, come on. You're telling me it's not already being commissioned.
No, it hasn't.
So are you waiting for the States?
No, we're not waiting for the States. What happens in the States is irrelevant to what happens in the over here. But it's just basically, so it's all about not only what happens on transmission, but also what happens, what the traffic is like to iPlayer, to stream it.
Gotcha,
so
gotcha.
I just keep putting on my Twitter, fucking binge my box set, you arseholes. I want another series. Because I'm certainly not.
Oh, we need a season two.
Yeah.
We'll start a campaign, I reckon.
Have you started thinking about
it? You know that Rob and Cassie aren't in season
They're
two?
Not.
We were at Bo's one of our questions.
No.
So we haven't read the books. We actually held back from reading the book so that we could enjoy the surprise of the show. I've just started the first one now. So I'm going to read the first two and then hold off in the hopes of a season two. But that was one of our questions. Will we ever find out then about the fate of Jamie and Peter, or, you know, more about Jed and Lexi?
Well, that's not my gift to give.
Fair.
And you do find out more about Lexi in The Likeness. I'm not going to tell you, but in The Likeness, you hear more about Lexi, where she's come from. I just decided to do something different because, you know, there's a phrase, there's a line that Cassie says to Sam, you know, people disappear all the time. Why can't the opposite be true? Why can't people disappear? And it felt like it was true to the world that strange things could happen inexplicably, that there would seem to be no rational explanation. How can two children disappear a lot, but how can one child be found in the state Adam was found in and have no explanation? And even though we don't find out, because that's in Tana's gift to give, it's not in mine. Even though we don't find out, I feel like if we do go forward, that crime, that loss of those children, that question mark, that really unsettling quality about it, that you just can't answer those questions, that it casts a long shadow. It kind of sets up the catalyst for Frank, for Scorcher Kennedy, for Antoinette Conway further on.
Yeah.
And we loved the supernatural element to the story. At one point, Ra was a wolf.
I know. I absolutely barked when I heard that. I thought that's funny. I worked on a show called Being Human. I wrote an episode of Being Human. I don't know if you know this show. It's like a flat share drama. But
I have heard of it.
They were a wolf, a vampire and a werewolf, and I absolutely loved
that.
Right
up your street, rep.
All I kept thinking was, you know, if I actually pulled that out of the bag, that would just be pretty dark. I always think the supernatural is our own brains anyway. What we imagine, what we're scared of, what we're guilty of, the thing we've done that we don't really want to look at. But I like having that extra thing, because that detail about the blood in the shoes and the slashes in the shirt is so awful. So what the hell? Let's run with it. Let's make that the thing that powers all the characters through subsequent series, if I get them.
You will get there.
You will. Sarah, what do you think happened to Peter and Jamie?
What do I think happened to Peter and Jamie? Well, I have various thoughts about what happened to Peter and Jamie. And some of those are kind of really practical, which is that, I don't know, that it's a big wood. They fell, they got stuck, they disappeared, who knows? But it's a detail about Adam which makes imagining what happens to Peter and Jamie almost impossible. How did they disappear and he get found like that? Unless there is something truly dark and sinister that was kind of stirred up into being by what those boys did to Sandra. They held her down and they raped her.
Yeah.
And that kind of kicked off some sort of monstrous sense of punishment or justice or whatever. Who knows? I don't even want to speculate in case I have to address it further down the line. I
can't wait to read the books.
But, you know, I don't know, maybe there is an Earl King in the woods. Maybe there really is.
You were saying that you obviously spent time here then while you were filming, most of it in Belfast, but some in Dublin. Is it true you got a tattoo while you were here in Dublin?
I got two tattoos when I was there in Dublin. I went to Dublin Inc. and got two tattoos.
Oh, what did you get?
Well,
If that's not too personal a question.
No. I got a pair of antlers, just a little stylized antlers, which was just this little design feature that we had on all the because when we were drumming up money to kind of take to, you know, go and try and get people in LA to give us loads of money, we had all these sort of beautifully produced kind of story documents and series documents and things like that to make people excited. And they're all decorated with these little stylized anchors. So I thought I'd get them done on my inside of my wrist. And I also got a hawthorn leaf because that's where the idea or have how I'd like to write the series all kicked off. And I just thought, well, there we are, let's do that.
Fab.
Now, before we get a season two confirmation, which I'm sure we're going to get, how are we going to get our Sarah Phelps fill? What are you working on in the meantime?
We've just locked, picture locked, the Agatha Christie, the fifth one I've done, which is called The Pale Horse.
It's yes.
just Love a two-hour one rather than a three-hour one. And it's got Rufus Sewell and Kaida Scodelario in it. And
love her.
It's fucking mental.
Oh, my
right
God.
Up our
yes,
streets.
We love Agatha Christie. It's so exciting.
It's very dark. It's very dark and sad and quite funny and odd and strange. And yes, we've just picture locked on that and we're... You know, that'll be on, I don't know, some point around Christmas, New Year, I think.
Love it.
And Christmas, New Year this year.
Sorry?
This year?
This sort of year, unless it goes into 2020, obviously, early 2020.
We'll keep an eye out for that.
We'll be watching.
Rufus Sewell and Kaida Scodelario are amazing.
And
they're
Sarah,
amazing.
Do you have any mad stories about like you guys going on any mad nights out during filming, or anyone who was particularly good crack while filming on set?
We went out for a night, Sarah Green and a load of makeup girls and some other people, and we went to a load of pubs and we had a fantastic time. I woke up the next morning fully dressed in my hotel room, wearing the hotel shower cap. I've got no idea why.
Brilliant.
I've got no idea why or how or what the hell possessed me. I hadn't run a bath. I hadn't didn't have the shower on. I hadn't even bothered taking off my shoes. What I had bothered to do in my extreme drunkenness was unwrap the hotel shower cap and put it on my head and tuck all my hair underneath it. No idea.
Sarah, next time you're in Dublin, you are coming on a night out with us, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I would love to come out on a night with
yes!
you. With
yes, it's happening.
We're doing it.
And I would wake up, God, no, I'd probably wake up in a biffer bin somewhere, but you
we
know.
We all will, don't worry.
Yeah,
we all will.
We're in it together. Come here, Sarah, before we let you go, obviously you're working on your own shows. What are you excited to watch that has been written by other people?
Oh, God, so much. I can't wait to see the trial of Christine Keeler that's coming up. I love Succession. I'm pretty much obsessed with it.
Love Succession. Big fan.
Oh, God, it's so good.
It's just so, quick and dry.
Oh, it's so quick and dry and vicious and funny and these terrible people, and that you find yourself feeling quite tenderly towards them.
I love Tom.
Oh, my God, Tom Wormsgams? How the hell did you come up with a name like that? And I love Ronan and Jared.
Love Ronan as well. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So I'm absolutely loving that. There are loads of things that I just adore watching. That I'm about to start watching End of the Fucking World, the second series of that, which I think I love the first series. So, and I'm really enjoying His Dark Materials, of course, because it's wonderful, and I spend way too much time wondering what my demon would be, and probably just be a slug, but. So I love watching just about anything that I haven't sort of worked on. It's great.
Amazing, amazing.
But you can just sit there and enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we've done with Dublin Murders. Sarah, yes. thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. You're so welcome. Thank you so much for being such champions. It's been a true joy just listening to the podcast after each set of episodes. Been such a shot in the arm. So thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for everything, Sarah. And thanks for chatting to us today. We loved it.
And we'll see you in Dublin for season two, hopefully, with loads of pints and Tato.
Season two drinks.
Tatoes. Oh, Christ, I'm so sorry about the Tatoes and the Red Bus.
don't mention the
don't
war.
Don't worry about that.
Shower caps for everyone next time you're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody. Thank you so much, guys. Real joy to talk to you.
Cheers, Sarah.
Bye, Sarah.
You too.
I love you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh my God.
I know.
Queen.
Shower caps and vodkas for everyone.
Do you know what it is as well? She's just so sound.
So sound.
So intelligent.
Talented.
So gas at the same time.
She's hilarious.
She is, what's the word? She is a seriously fabulous woman.
Imagine being on your fifth Agatha Christie TV adaptation for the BBC and being that nice and just so chill about it.
Like, also, I love the way she's like, oh yeah, it's only 2 hours this time instead of three. Yeah, only two.
Oh, yes. She's cool. Really like her. That was deadly. What so juicy good. Bits did we learn?
Well, we kind of heard a few different theories about what may have happened to...
Great line of questioning from you,
yeah,
Reb.
Yeah, agreed.
Ted Hastings?
What do you think happened to Peter and Jamie? And yeah, she gave us some really good theories.
Because we're never going to know, really, guys, are we?
That was a great question, well done.
Guys,
great question.
I mean, thanks very much. I just really want to know. I still think about them every day. Is that really bad? Do you know when you just... I still think about them every single day.
If I watch a TV show...
They were 4 weeks of your life.
Yeah, like if I watch a TV show, like over a large amount of time and rewatch it a bit, I feel like the people are real.
Yeah,
they're my friends. Mm-hmm. Do you know, I miss Cassie and Rob, do you know?
Yeah.
And we did hear that they're not coming back in season two if we get much of actually.
We're
like, that's the end of their story, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd be really surprised if there wasn't a season two.
Oh no, they're getting a season two. She's I'm okay about that.
She's still airing in America, so
I believe her when she says it's not in the bag yet though.
No, it's not in the bag yet, but I mean it's in the bag in my head.
Yeah. They'd be mad not to.
Sure, we're sitting here still talking about the TV series.
And I love when she was like, oh, it doesn't matter what the States think.
No, sorry, the word she used was irrelevant.
Oh, God. Obsessed with that. Next up is a lady who had us all fooled.
Please, God.
Because she didn't wear a bra. It's Rosalind, a.k.a. Leah McNamara.
Hey, guys. Hi, how are you?
Really good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Oh, good, yeah. Thanks for calling.
Not at all. I'm going to do my absolute best not to call you Rosalind because...
No, don't worry.
We're so invested.
Don't we don't think you're anything like her, don't worry.
Don't worry, no, you are. But honestly, I've listened to bits of the podcast and it's so funny, like, honestly. But it's funny while at the same time still being, like, really interesting. Like, he actually has such a great balance. It's brilliant. I hope loads of people are listening.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Oh, my God, thank you so much. That's
you did
so
a great
nice.
Job, too.
Oh, you killed us.
Oh, like,
well, you oh, literally killed us, yeah.
Jesus, literally, I didn't see it coming.
I think that's what I think I was it in, what was it, episode 5, I think, and you were talking about the stuff in the caravan park. and we were listening to you here, and I was laughing because you felt, you're like, oh, I just felt so sorry for her.
And you were.
I was roaring when you were like, oh, like, I mean, she doesn't even. I mean, first of all, can we talk about how can they afford a holiday home when Ross doesn't even have a bra? Oh, lad, by the
we still crack ourselves up about that. Rebecca laughs at that every day, and she said it.
I said it.
But come here, Rosalind. Rosalind,
you did it.
I tell you, I do it to everyone we talk to. Leah, as soon as, well, I found out that Rosalind was evil, it made so much sense where she got the sexy clothes from so fast on the caravan pub date with Ross.
So fast.
With them, I say, to be honest, because I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't know if she'd have them in the house. I'm like, I say she probably robbed them and just, like, would rob, because I don't think, I do believe that she wouldn't have any money. Like, they don't, wouldn't give her an allowance to go off. Like, I do, there is some element of that in terms of, like, show even all the neighbours, like, oh, she does everything and stuff. Like, I would, there is an element of truth there in the sense of she doesn't have a life of her own. Like, that definitely is true. And that's absolutely no excuse.
Yeah.
Everything else. But I say she's well able to go into a shop and like rob something. Do you know what I mean?
Well, able. And come here, what was it like playing someone that was so evil? Like, how do you prepare for such a demented character? I know it was only, you know, maybe the final episode when we found
kind
out
of really the final episode, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you must have to transition into that headspace.
I guess, yeah. So, I mean, I knew where it was going to be going with her from quite early on, because I had obviously read the book. Once I'd been cast and stuff, I had read the book and I had a good bit of time actually with it before we started filming. So I read the book, so I knew that was the route that she was behind, you know, the whole thing with Katie. So I guess I knew from then that she's a complete psychopath. So I was able to kind of start thinking about that. So I actually got a good few books, and I just did a lot of research on psychopaths as people and kind of how they operate and how their mind works. Because it's really specific, because they're not like mentally unwell. Mm. They actually are very clear in their morals, because it's not that they don't have a moral compass. They just believe their moral compass is correct and that they are completely right in what they're doing, you know. So they're very interesting as people, because people are very quick to be like, oh, they're insane because of their actions, but they're actually not. They think very clearly in what they're doing. I was just about to say very calculated, very manipulative. They can often be really charming, you know, and they're very good at getting people on their side. Like, they're great liars. So, like,
God,
I know a few people that fit those criteria. Yeah,
taking the psychopath test boxes for you, Brendan.
But you do, because I knew nothing about this, but reading about, there's a lot of them actually that they're in, like, you know, embedded within society, and they walk around, and that you probably have, everyone has definitely come across actually one. Yeah. You know, they don't all turn into murderers and killers, you know, and also people they can actually, you know, they can be very good in business. And like,
that's it, they're always CEOs. Yeah. I watched that John Ronson documentary.
They are.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so it's depending on their upbringing and their background, that's obviously going to have more of an indication of the decisions they're going to end up making. But as people, they are still inherently psychopaths, and they will still carry themselves in a certain way. But like, you know, they can be influenced by their environment and stuff in terms of where they're going to end up. So obviously Rosalind isn't coming from a great environment in that sense, in terms of, you know, her family situation, their financial situation, where they are, you know, the dynamic within the house is definitely, you know, unbearable, I would imagine. So, yeah, she was always going to kind of go a bad way.
You had us all fooled, though. Like, that moment that we found out, I squealed. That when it was revealed, you know, the shot of you running and then Simone's chasing you.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They did that really well in the edit.
So clever.
Like, brilliant, kind of, it is.
Yeah, because you're kind of like, oh, Simone, like, of course, you know, and you're kind of looking at her for a moment. I thought they did that quite well. Actually, the reveal was quite good.
Was it hard to keep in? I know that you'd read the book, so you knew that Rosalind was responsible, but was it hard to keep in that you were actually the Katie's killer? Your character was, not you.
Hard in the sense of, like, what you mean in terms of...
Like, when people, like, that you know, or, you know, different people were asking you, oh, like, what's happening in Dublin Murders? Were you just like, oh, yeah, poor Rosalind?
Oh, yeah, so as in, while those episodes were kind of showing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, different, yeah, for sure. Like, when people would be like, oh my God, like, you're so, thankfully it was mostly like texts of people being like, oh my God, like, so heartbreaking, like, you know, like, it's so sad, like, you're great. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like, thanks, yeah, I'm like, but there was definitely that part of me that hoping that, you know, everyone would stick with it to the end, because I mean, that's when I really got to have a lot of fun with, you know, Sarah Phelps just came out with such amazing material, you know, to have a scene that long, I think, in an hour's television that can play like that, I think you really have to have such great material at source. And I think she just came up with such amazing scenes, and I think she did such a great job adapting them from those two books, you know, that it's just so much to kind of like get your teeth into and just have a lot of fun with this. It's a huge credit to her, you know.
That scene in the interview room between you and Sarah Green, like, I was squealing at the television. Was that your, I'm assuming that was your favourite scene?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, it just goes to so many places, and the dynamic between them, you know, because we've seen Rosalind a lot with Rob, you know, and that's kind of been its own separate thing. But the fact that there's another element, I think, with Cassie, and she has a good handle on them, because she's taking in information all the time. So while, you know, she's distracting you with other stuff, and, you know, she's manipulating them in other ways, she's constantly bringing in, and she's very intelligent at reading situations and reading the dynamic between them, and she would definitely have picked up on all of that stuff for sure. So to get to sit down and, you know, and be with Sarah and have that kind of material, and for it to run at the length that it did, and it goes, you know, where it begins and where it ends in terms of finding out, you know, that Rob is Adam, like, that kind of bombshell, to get to do that and be it and have, you know, I think we did it over a day and a half. It was originally going to be shot in a day, but then there was just so much to get, because we also had the lads in, you know, behind the screen.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
was also going to be playing. So they had so much to cover, you know, and the length of it. So we ended up extending it to another half a day. So yeah, it was a full day and a half. But
it,
I mean,
looked
it was just
so much fun. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It looked like so much fun.
And speaking of the lads yeah. behind the screen, you previously worked with Mo Dunford, who plays Sam. You
yes.
were in Vikings
yeah.
together. What was it like working together again? But
totally different
scenario.
I didn't actually work with Mo on Vikings, but we were definitely on the show at the same time, but we didn't have any stuff together. But I did a film called Metal Heart that I actually did get to work with Mo. So we would have known each other anyways from that. So he's so lovely, you know, and it was so nice to have kind of such a great group of really lovely people on the day. And you get to working with people that are as passionate about it as you are, and are so invested in it, you know, and it was such a lovely job. The crew were amazing. You know, that was obviously all the crew that would have been coming off Game of Thrones, and they're up in Belfast, and they're all just such a lovely group of people. And, you know, John Hayes, who directed those episodes, he's absolutely brilliant. Such a lovely guy. So when you get to just be around that, you know, and that gets to be your worst day, I mean, it's amazing. And I just feel really fortunate to have gotten to work with the people I have, and to have gotten to work with that material and that part, like, so early on in my career. I just feel really fortunate at all to have been able to do that, you know.
Yeah, and Leah, I know that you're saying that the crew were all amazing. Did you guys go on any mad nights out during filming, or did you have a rap party, any crack, any scandal?
Give us the goss.
We did have a rap party, which is great crack. I kind of was a little bit of a recluse while we were filming, because, you know, Rosalind is such a strange person. I was kind of kept it, I definitely would have kept the head down mostly, but no, the rap was great crack. But we actually did have some photos to get taken for Stars, which is the network that is showing in the States the morning after the rap party. So I also had a self-tape to do the morning after the rap party, so I was kind of had a bit of fun, but not an insane amount of fun. But it was, you know, it was kind of off and on. So I was kind of got to be home a bit in Limerick while we were filming, and also in Dublin a little bit. So I'm from Limerick, so it meant filming in Belfast on my off time. I kind of meant I got to go home and see my family and stuff.
Aww,
which,
you know, lovely.
Which is really nice to do, yeah.
Come here, Leah, very important question. Why did Rosalind not have a bra?
So I think there's a multiple kind of reasons why I would, in my head anyways, for that. So I think the no bra thing, like, she knows that there's going to be detectives coming to the house. Like, she knows the body is going to be found and that's all going to unfold. You know, the likelihood that one of them is going to be a man is pretty high. So, you know, she would have done all her background research on everybody. So for them to come to the house, it's, you know, and I know Cassie and Rob have seen about it, and she says Rosalind, like, that's weird, like, and what the hell is the story with the brand? He's like, oh, I didn't notice that, but, like, he definitely would have noticed that, but doesn't want to admit that because, you know, she's a teenager. But it is a weird, distracting thing, and it isn't something that you would see. And it's also setting up the element of all the clothes that she's wearing as her mom's old clothes. So it's trying to put this thing out there of, like, I'm so neglected. I don't get anything for myself. I don't even have a bra that fits me. These are my mom's old, you know, skirt and shirt and her shoes and stuff. I have nothing of my own. And it also creates an element of, does he not, I think he might have touched on this, like, does he not let her wear a bra? Because it's planting the seed of that abuse of what she wants people to think is going on within the house. I don't think she would have, there's no way she always wore those clothes specifically because they're so dramatic and weird. But it's like, what, it's putting a thing of like, oh, does her dad make her dress in her mom's old clothes? Yeah. Like, has his daughter and his wife wearing the same stuff? You know, because there's definitely a period that where, you know, the audience should have been, everyone's kind of looking at Jonathan because there's something, you know, you think there's something off, and he does have his own past as well, definitely, for sure. So for, it was all about setting that up of a thing of, is there neglect going on, is there abuse going on, and wanting to put that in their heads in whatever strange way that she could, you know.
I can't wait to watch it back now, knowing that she's a full psychopath, and wondering if there's clues.
Yeah,
because that's all brilliant. So in the meantime, we don't know if we're getting a season 2 yet, and we don't know if Rosalind will return, but in the meantime, you are appearing in the TV adaptation of Sally Rooney's Normal People, which is so exciting, alongside Sarah Green. Yeah. But you probably won't have any scenes together, but is there anything that you can tell us about that?
Anything I can tell you, obviously, working with Lenny Abramson was great. I mean, you know, he's just so amazing. So to get to work with him was really special. I mean, wow, like, you know, what work did you want? And I just think the show from, obviously, you know, you never know until you see it, but I think it's coming around April time. But I think they have found in, you know, Daisy and Paul, who are going to be playing Marianne and Connell, I think they have found something really different that you don't see. Like, neither of them are, you know, massive superstars, you know, or huge names. Like, it's Paul's first TV job, and I think this as a show is just going to be purely about the story and purely about people without any of the massive bells and whistles that you see. And it definitely, you know, it'll appeal to teenagers, I'm sure, but you know a lot of the shows you see maybe on Netflix and stuff of these kind of teenage shows are about teenagers. It can be quite a, like, glamorized version of what that actually is to be someone at that age and what it is trying to go through the motions of being in school, having relationships, like trying to figure out what your life is and how that can be impacted based on your class and where you're from and, you know, your intellectual ability. And I think it's definitely going to be a version of a show that people can fall in love with that is just very raw.
I think it's
going to be something. I don't think it's going to be anything like anyone's seen before is my feeling on it. Amazing. I'm just so happy to have gotten to be such a small part. I'm such a small part in it, but I mean, you know.
So are you Connell's girlfriend that he meets? Because we love the book, so, or who's your character?
Rachel. So I'm playing Rachel Morin. So Rachel is in the book who they kind of were with each other in school. They're kind of in within the friend.
Yeah, she's one of the cooler girls in school, isn't she? Yeah.
So the cool girl in school, and he, like, who in the book, it's like a really sad moment. He ends up asking her to the deads instead of Marianne in the book, and that's like spoiler for whoever.
it's going to be brilliant.
I can't wait. What a book.
Yeah. So I'm Sally Rooney obviously adapted the majority of the series. I think she did the first 6 episodes of 12 half an hour episodes.
Wow.
And I think, yeah, so much of the scenes are really quite close actually to what the book is. So I think people who are fans of the book, I think they're going to be really happy with it.
April.
I mean, she's amazing. She's so talented. Yeah, April. Love April-ish is what I've been told. So yeah.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. We cannot wait. Leah, thank you so much for chatting with us today, and best of luck with everything.
Thanks so much for having me on.
It was
so nice to talk to you.
Oh, Leah, thank you so much. You're so nice.
Not at all. Thanks so much. And best of luck with the rest. I can't wait to see what show you do next. I'm definitely going to watch it.
Oh, thanks, Leah. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Well, guys, it's safe to say she's nothing like Rosalind.
At all. At the amount of research she did into psychopaths.
Yeah. She's so nice, guys. We had two for two now.
Yeah.
Oh, listen.
People
we're
are going to think we paid them for the compliment.
Yeah.
If you could just read this script,
there's
we'll
another
email
bag of tato under the table. Thank you very much.
Now,
so
I haven't
much
called
insight.
Her Rosalind.
Oh, sure, look,
listen,
this
happens to us all. We really were invested, Hannah. That just shows your commitment to the series and to the cause.
Also, we found out why Rosalind doesn't wear a bra.
I mean,
which is great.
Crafty.
It's all you wanted to know.
I have been waking up in the middle of the night wondering why Rosalind isn't wearing a bra. You know, you wake up in a cold sweat. You're like, oh.
These are the exclusive facts people come to this podcast for.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Next up, we have another, would we call him?
He's absolutely a murderer, Rebecca.
Would we call him a murderer?
Would you call him a psychopath? Would you call him someone?
Oh, no.
No, he was a vulnerable individual who was duped.
It's Damien. What's Damien? Damien's second name in the series. Damien Donnelly.
Oh, is it?
Damien Donnelly, played by Johnny Holden, is up next. So, Damien, what are Damien? I knew I was going to do that. We keep going. We kept calling Leah Rosalind as well. Johnny, what has life been like since Dublin Murders?
Yeah, it's been pretty normal, to be honest, because, you know, when you finish filming something, it doesn't come out for another 6-7 months, so you just get on with life, really. But, yeah, it's been cool. There's been good response to it over here in England as well. And, yeah, it's been good.
It's getting an absolutely unbelievable response. Did you read the books before you got, or you auditioned, or you got the character?
I have to be honest, when I auditioned, I got sent to the first two episodes and I read them and I called my agent and I said I just thought they were the best things I'd read in about a year. Aww. And I called my agent and I said I don't care who I play in this, I'll play a postman, I just want to be in it. And then I actually auditioned for a different part and didn't get it.
Give
and
us then, the inside
what
scoop
part?
What part was it?
I went for
Quigley.
I can say this name because he's a good friend of mine. But the lovely, handsome, well cheekboned feeling.
Ah,
you would have made a good feeling as well.
Feeling here,
isn't that so? It was totally weird. So then I didn't get that role. My agent called me, kind of said, "Look, sorry, man, I haven't gone any further, but they're starting to talk to you about a different role." And then I was actually filming something else, and I was in the airport about to get on a plane, and my agent called me, said they've given you a different role off the bat. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. They said, that lad looks like a murderer.
Not a compliment.
And then, yeah, all I knew was in it. And then I got another call about 2 days later saying, oh, and all we know is that you'll be playing the guy who did it kind of thing.
Okay, so that's when you found out that you were going to play a killer. So you knew from the minute you walked onto set.
Yeah, but I hadn't read the book yet. And I remember going to the first read-through and a few of the cast members talking about reading the book. Because I don't, as an actor, I don't massively like being influenced by the inspiration. I just like dealing with what we're dealing with itself, the actual scripts. But then I felt very guilty and I went and I read the book.
Yeah. Has to be done. Johnny, can you describe the colour French blue to me, please?
Oh, God.
Like, what shade are we talking?
We've had borderline arguments about this.
Yeah, what is a French blue?
What do you think?
But well, I said the flag.
I'm torn like between a pale blue or a deep blue. I mean, I'm covering all bases
there. I keep thinking a duck egg colour, but that's definitely not French blue. It's a duck egg.
We've gone in three different directions here, Johnny, and we need your help.
Very different. Well, I know the middle class loved it. That's all I know. I would say a slightly darker version of what's on the French flag. That's what I would say.
Oh, guys, I win. Now, I wish we'd made a bet.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind a dress in that colour.
You were like sky blue or a navy, somewhere in between.
Like, so completely covered. Every shade.
Yeah.
Johnny had us all fooled in the series. I thought you were this lovely, friendly fella the whole way through.
Who cried a bit.
You were a bit emotional. Was it hard keeping it in to people who hadn't read the books and they were watching it?
Do you know what the great thing about Sarah's writing is? That everyone has a secret. But obviously the secret that everyone wants to know in something like this is like, who did it? So I didn't tell anybody except my partner. So she was the only person I had kind of told. And then even on set, because we were getting the scripts as we were going.
Ooh.
And a lot of the, like, yes. like pretty much all the crew hadn't read the books or anything. So they were all on set going, do you know who did it? And I was like, no, I'm not sure.
Oh, that's great, really good.
Buzz on set, isn't it?
It's great. And then, like, Conleth Hill, who played Kelly, just came in one day.
Adore.
Into the green room before, yeah, absolute legend. And just kind of looked at me and went, I learned something about you today. I thought he was talking about me, like, personally. I was like, jeez, what dirt has he got on me now? But I realized he was talking about that. So it was great to have a secret. My only worry as an actor was that, was I going to make him so, you know, so, like, needy that people were just going to, like, know it was him straight away.
No, we didn't have a clue.
So I'm glad. Well, it's great because even if people did guess it, the whole Rosalind twist is even better. So
yeah.
Yeah, there's layers to that murder.
All because of a bloody biscuit as well.
And you kind of answered this question already, but what was the crack like on set? Did everyone get on? Was it a good buzz?
It was unreal. Honestly, from the extras all the way up to the directors and Killian and Sarah, there wasn't a bad person on set. And it was great. And I think the testament of a job is how many people you stay in touch with when you finished it. And we finished filming this in like February and March earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I see Ian, who played Phelan, probably every week. Probably.
My fave.
Your fave.
I'll say the crack and WhatsApp group.
Absolutely. I stay in touch with Sarah. I stay in touch with some of the makeup girls. Eugene, who played Quigley.
Love Eugene O'Hair.
Oh, absolute legend of a man.
He's funny.
He's great crack. Stay in touch with him. So yeah, I mean, I've just stayed in touch with everyone, and it was just such a great buzz. There was never a day you didn't want to be there. So yeah.
Aww. Come here, Johnny. What are you working on next?
I have a TV show coming out where I make a brief appearance called Baghdad Central. Comes out later this year.
Okay.
I've just said it though.
Tell us more.
It was made by the same production company who did Dublin Murders, actually.
Now we'll be that's going on the list.
Yeah, there you go. I was only doing location-based dramas. So that's coming out this year, and then some other stuff next year as well.
Absolutely brilliant.
Exciting times.
Yeah, good.
Do you have any really random stories that happened on set that no one would know about? Who was the most crack out of all the characters?
Out of the cast?
Yes. Yeah.
I absolutely adore Sarah Green.
She's fab. We got to chat to her and to Killian before the first episode went out.
Yeah, I mean, they're both absolutely amazing. They're both great crack. Sarah is one of those really annoying people that she's so talented and lovely, and she's a great messer on set, and then she can just turn it on and you're like, how do you do that? Like, how do you go from 0 to 60 and be like such a messer and then just turn it on and be absolutely amazing? So I have a lot of time for Sarah, and similarly for Killian. I would say Killian probably made me feel most at ease on set, which was great. But that big dramatic scene where obviously I just kind of confess all, that took about 2 days to film because it's obviously quite a long scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of it, you know, you're just saying the same thing. And Killian and Eugene, who are obviously interrogating me, just lost it. We all just kind of lost the plot. And in between takes, they were just going, you do cry quite a lot. You know what I mean? So we're just going, yeah, we're just reciting the lines in ridiculous ways to keep ourselves amused. And yeah, so the pair of them were great crack.
Yeah, it looked fun. Like, the show was so dramatic, but I got the vibe that it was very good crack just by people's tweets about it, I think.
Yeah, it was great because I think when you're dealing with such tough subject matter, you just have to keep it light as well. Otherwise, you'll go mad, especially for Killian and Sarah.
Yeah, so true. And Johnny, I need to ask you this. I don't know how many, you did have a few scenes with them. Dr. Hanley, the wine in the woods. I know you weren't in that scene, but what was that like on set watching him pour the wine all over himself?
Oh, it was great. I love Jonathan. We actually did a TV show together last year, and then we did a radio play together this year as well. So we've worked together a few times. So I got on set and was like, oh my gosh, look, Jonathan, how are you? Yeah, mad. They did that. I wasn't on set the day they did it, but I was there the day after. And apparently they didn't really think about it, and obviously it's a really cold night, and they hadn't really like warmed the wine apparently.
Oh no.
So they just kind of like left it out chilled, and he was getting a lot of applause from the crew for just getting it done, because it was a freezing night apparently. Oh. And
a cold slap.
I know, apparently on the first take he just went for it, and obviously no one had really thought about it, and he poured it all over him, and apparently just went
oh, best like, served chilled.
Like, okay, cool. Maybe, you know, maybe let's warm the wine, guys. Poor Jonathan. But apparently he did a stellar job. I mean, a crazy scene. And we weren't helping him by slagging him off before he had to film it anyway. So.
Amazing.
No, we
amazing.
Loved that scene so much.
It was great.
So and he's, for yeah, Jonathan. He's a legend.
Yeah. Yeah, he's loads of props. Yeah.
Fab. Johnny, come here. Thanks so much for talking to us. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a mil for having me.
Well, that was my favourite story, like a non-TV show related story about the wine being freezing.
The man
and poor Dr.
Death.
Hanley.
I mean,
not being able to catch his breath.
Honestly, he must have been like, guys. I actually, that scene is one of it sticks with me. It sticks.
You're
me.
Right. Though. I want to watch all of it again now, knowing yeah, knowing Jesus, all these little yeah. things. Yeah,
so interesting to hear that he auditioned for a different role as well in the series.
Your beloved Phelan.
Oh, listen, there's only one Phelan, but I do think that Johnny would have done a great job.
Do you ever randomly Google that sometimes? There's articles on like people who went for roles, like massive celebrities, like Leonardo DiCaprio went for this, but Tom Hanks got it. I get kind of like really pulled into articles like that sometimes.
Hocus Pocus, Leonardo DiCaprio was meant to play Max
Excuse
Dennison.
Me, what?
Yeah. See, Brendan, see how interesting it is? And you know what else is interesting? Googling celebrities that are the same age and being really freaked out by it.
And I think,
oh, that's a good one now. Isn't it?
And I think Britney Spears was originally meant to release Diamonds by Rihanna. Something weird like
that. Yeah,
someone
like
recorded
that, yeah.
a demo. Yeah. Anyway, tangent.
As fucking usual, yeah.
We love Johnny Holden.
Yeah, absolutely fab.
Madonna and Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh my
God, are they?
See, guys?
No, yeah, I can't believe that though, no.
Nicolas Cage and Rob Lowe, Jared Leto and Martin Freeman. There's just three for you. Enjoy the world of celebs that are the same age. That's shocking.
Thank you for that, Hannah.
Who's next?
Cathy Monaghan, who plays Margaret.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? It's Brendan, Hannah and Reb here from Shrine Podcasts.
Hello.
Hiya, Brendan.
Come here. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, look, thanks so much for having me. Thank you. No problem at all.
Like, we've just loved watching the show. Like... loved it.
Can you
tell us, like, bring us back to the start about like what your audition process was like and getting the part?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so originally I auditioned for a completely different part. I auditioned for someone else, and then I didn't get that part, but
okay.
I remember they got back to me and they said, look, we really like what Cathy did, but we're not sure that that's the particular route we want her to go. So we're going to keep her in mind for something else. And then true enough, because sometimes they say that's not actually the true, you know what I mean? Sometimes mm-hmm. that's not the way it goes. But they got back and they brought me in for Margaret. And I did the audition with them. And I think it was literally within a week or two, I was told, they'd love to have me on board, and I said, yeah. I was delighted with Margaret. I mean, I liked her. I know she's a tragic individual, but I was excited. I was excited with the challenge, I have to say.
And she literally doesn't smile once in the show. She must have been a draining character to play and to get into that headspace.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was. There's no denying that poor Margaret. I mean, you know, you meet her at the lowest point in her life. You know, she's just full of grief and guilt, and I mean, it's the brutal truth of where she is and what has happened all those years ago. You know, I think she's just in a bad, bad place, and that's so true. There is no smiles. Even when we were doing a photo shoot for Stars, the photographer was lovely and he had music playing in the background, and I mean, he commented, he was like, yeah, no, that isn't actually Margaret's character. There is no smile. We don't see that from her. And I mean, it wouldn't be truthful in the context of where you meet Margaret. You know, she definitely has an awful lot to be somber and sad and miserable about.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You played her so well. And did had you read the books before? Like, did you know that Rosalind was responsible for killing Katie?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know that particular truth. I was kind of reading it as I got cast. So once I knew I had had the part, I kind of, you know, then did a manic of what books I needed to catch up on. And, and then when the script came through, it was, you know, but I kind of, I don't think I wanted to know too much, if I'm honest with you, just for the, obviously you need to know what's going on and you need to know the context of what's happening. But there's a kind of a nice element to you know, to Margaret not actually knowing what's going on. Because
your character doesn't know, so it makes sense.
Yeah, you know. So I was kind of conscious of that. I wanted to know as much as I could about the situation she found herself in. But no, I didn't know that Rosalind was responsible. That was everybody was like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And come here, Kathy, you obviously acted kind of mostly opposite Peter MacDonald, who played your husband, Jonathan Devlin.
Yeah.
He was terrifying.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
How was that?
A couple of people said to me, because they didn't recognise, it was only actually like after maybe the first or second episode, they were like, oh my God, that's your man off Moon Boy, or, you know what I mean?
Yes. That's a
brilliant thing, because he was playing such a scary character. I mean, you know, there was many people who thought, maybe did he do it?
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
What's his connection to this?
I was convinced it was him.
Same.
Yeah. I mean, and he was a pleasure to work with. I mean, he really was. He was, you know, miserable and awful as my husband, but, you know, off camera, he was a delight, really lovely guy, and, like, just so talented. So it was so easy to be around him, you know?
Now, Kathy, that shower scene, when you get in the shower with Rosalind, it's like the scene from Psycho. Like, I'll never forget it. How did you prepare for that?
Oh, that was... and listen, as well, that comes across as a daytime scene. But we actually shot that at night. So to add peace, you know, terror and freezing and other elements to that. So, I mean, that was pretty intense, even shooting, you know, even just being aware of, you know, Rosalind in the shower on her own, you know, the just eerie feel of it. And also even coming out with those words, I mean, they're heavy, heavy words to say. You know, I wish you didn't, you know, you just weren't, it's just the weight of what Margaret said.
Yeah, you were never wanted,
I never wanted you. Yeah. Oh, God, I mean, that was, you know, I mean, that was really, really just cut deep.
Yeah,
you know?
You have to dig deep for something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And even Rosalind, you know, when she said, I think there was maybe 3 or 4 times we shot that. And then obviously they needed to get up at the right angles and...
And dry you off every time.
Yeah, that's
so true.
The crew were amazing. They were literally waiting outside, hot water bottles, back to the tent, you know, trying to just fix you up for continuity. And then it's just really just trying to keep in your own head, you know, just to really make that believable, that she just, you know, why does she not like Rosalind? What is all that going on behind? I mean, you know, Margaret wasn't aware that Rosalind had done that, but she is, on some level, just knows that Rosalind is, you know, she's just part and parcel of the badness, the past, yeah. And it just seems to have all...
Do you think that Margaret was just carrying, obviously, all just the weight, that complete burden, or there was something that happened in the caravan park? Was Jonathan potentially also slipping her pills or drugging her or medicating her, or was she just carrying the weight of everything over the years?
No, I think she was, for me personally, I mean, I think Margaret just was broken. You know, she was a broken soul from what had happened when they were children, you know, with all the, because she was part of all that, you know, she would have been around, she knew the missing kids and how herself and Jonathan actually got together, and, you know, so that was, and then she never really, that was true, she didn't want Rosalind, you know, that was just something that they tried to make work. And I think when Jessica and Katie came along, they played by the brilliant Amy Macken. I mean, she was just amazing playing the two girls. I think, you know, Katie was like her hope. There was a hope in Margaret. And then as soon as Katie got ripped away in just horrific circumstances, and that it's still connected, like Margaret was aware that it was somewhat connected to the past. Didn't know how, what, but that the past was part of this and was responsible. And I think that was the main, that was just Margaret's focus for, you know, the misery that she just found herself in and what she was trying to deal with. I don't know if maybe that's how Peter was, but I never felt, I felt that Jonathan just, I think he didn't know what to think. He didn't know what to do. I mean, he felt guilt and remorse as well for what had happened. And I think he was just trying to manage Margaret. You know, I think she wanted to be there. I mean, she's very distant from Roslyn and from Jessica. You know, I think that all her hope was in Katie. And when she went, and in just the worst way possible, I think that's just the end of Margaret. I think Margaret just
had nothing left to give.
That's the way that it just, and even when, you know, the last scene when it all came to just a head with Roslyn, that we know that's what she did. I mean, I could just see Margaret, you know, packing bags and saying good luck to everyone, and that was the end of it. She was done, you know.
Another theory, another theory that we had, Cathy, was that Jonathan was having an affair with Simone.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was a possibility?
Yes, absolutely. I think Margaret just, but I don't think she even, you know, I think she was even gone past caring. I don't think she really, I don't think she cared. I just think she was given up, you know. She just, it bothered her that Simone was, you know, maybe trying to take Katie. It was irrational nonsense as well, and she was definitely doing an awful lot of pill popping herself.
Yeah,
trying to self-medicate, just trying to get through the day, because, you know, I don't think it wasn't a case for her for living for her other two, which is just, you know, unimaginable as a, you know, her as a mother, that there was two other children in the home that still needed caring for and minding, and she just, you know, she was just gone, absent. She was there in body, but mind was just gone.
We also had a theory. There was a scene that mentioned a lot of pink and blue. It was the pink of the coffin. We thought that there was a twin swap at one point.
Yes, you wouldn't know. No.
We just got a little too into it.
A bit carried away.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, it actually comes, you know, just how kind of a bit silly Margaret is as well, that other people knew her children better than, you know, she did.
Okay.
You know, her favourite colours, what they liked. I mean, Margaret was just, she just was, I mean, I don't, I'm trying to think of the nicest way possible.
Did you, like, when you finished filming each day, did you come away almost kind of feeling a bit like Margaret? Like, was it, like, it was really heavy to watch. Were you, did you come away feeling a bit down?
No, if I'm honest with you, I mean, I've done this long enough to know, you know, when I'm there, when I get the script, when I'm on set, when I'm prepping before, you know, yes, I get into the headspace that you know, is needed for whatever scenes I'm filming. But I'm really good at not, you know, taking that home or just sort of, you know, shaking off that particular character, and it doesn't, because I have played some, you know, pretty heavy characters before, and I just, you know, I don't take it home. I sort of put Margaret, you know, in her place now.
You definitely don't want to take Margaret home,
no. And I can look at her now from an outsider point of view, you know?
Yeah.
And Cathy, you just... She was such a poignant character, and you played her absolutely beautifully. What's next for you?
Oh, thank you so much. That's lovely to hear. Thanks a million. Well, I have The Boys from County Hell that's coming out, and that's a feature film, I think it was. We filmed in Belfast as well. And Vikings.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of Viking Dublin really murder crossover.
Yeah, listen, that is, I mean, Vikings, I'm playing a shield maiden, Lagatha's shield maiden. I mean, I did, we did training for this. It's a completely different character. There is nothing sort of downtrodden, sad. This is Vikings era, is my character in Vikings, and she is a serious
fighter. There's, you know, there's no...
Yeah, so you get a little break from Margaret Vale.
Yeah, although physically. So Margaret emotionally and mentally was draining, whereas Vikings physically, that was heavy going. It really was. I mean, we filmed it as well in the November, December, January type. So that was extremely physically demanding, definitely.
Well, Cathy, thank you so much for talking to us. That sounds so exciting. We can't wait to watch you in the new seasons of Vikings, and we loved having you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million, guys, for having me.
Do you have to, like, go into your audition and they just ask you a couple of questions and gauge if you're the nicest person in Ireland and then you get the job? Is that what's happening here? Yes. And that's not me being a lickarse, but these are like a collection of the most polite people I've ever spoken to.
Very polite, yeah.
Very polite, because Irish people are lovely, aren't they?
Yeah, but some Irish people can be like very crass and loud, and we're just getting really, really sweet, lovely people that sound like we paid them to thank us and compliment us.
Yeah. I love the way there was like a common thread there that poor Cathy was under the cold water, a bit like, what's his name with the red wine?
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Hanley.
Yeah.
And I love that we can ask characters questions and they can give us, as actors, their opinion
on
their
what?
Interpretation, because everything is still open. So I love that we kind of got from Cathy that there was no twin swap. Let it fucking go.
Thank God we cleared that up, guys.
Okay, because that was a massive question mark.
And that she wasn't being drugged by her husband. And then we also learned that Jonathan was actually having an affair with Simone, and Rebecca sat back with one of the smuggest faces I've ever seen.
Your line of questioning
thrilled.
Tonight.
I was just like, listen, I need to know. But also, do you know what I found really interesting? We obviously thought there was a twin swap going on with the colour mixing up. But I love that Cathy summarised it, that actually Margaret didn't know her daughters as well as she thought.
That kind of broke
my heart.
And
that was really, really sad. Yeah. And I don't know how we didn't think of that. We really went full twin swap instead.
We went full theory. Yeah. Yes.
Up next, we've got Kiva or Quiva O'Malley.
Quiva. Yes, this is our last one of the evening, and she played Rob's absolutely fantastic housemate, Heather.
Hi, how are you guys? Thanks for having me. How are you getting on?
We love you, Quiva.
Do you? Thank you.
Well, first of all, we have to apologise because we called you Helen in the podcast, but we found out today that it was because the BBC subtitles said Helen instead of Heather.
Yeah, oh my God, that's where all, like, we were actually to laugh, all of us, because, like, yeah, the BBC thing came out and then pretty much everyone thought I was Helen, which I was totally fine with. But
we're vindicated, guys. It's not our fault.
It's not your fault, honestly. Like, my friends were all like, so Helen, and I was like, that's not the character name. But I think it was the BBC released, like, a clip of the first scene with Killian, and the subtitle person put Helen instead of Heather. So
great, it's not our fault.
It's not your fault at all.
P45.
Come here, Quiva. Are you a better housemate in real life than Heather is?
I'd like to think so.
Do you label everything in the fridge and the freezer?
No, I definitely wouldn't be a labeler myself. I'm actually not very good in the kitchen, so I probably wouldn't be in there a lot. But no, I am actually really tidy. The one thing I think me and Heather probably have in common. But
that's a good trait, though.
Now, Quiva, I was shocked when I watched this scene. But what was it like being dropped on the ground mid-ride by Killian Scott outside a nightclub?
Oh God, it's actually so funny because doing the scenes are like, it was actually so great. Like we kind of block out in stages because pretty much he goes into this neck spasm and then like you're on the ground and like we kind of set it up a few different ways. But that was actually outside like the nightclub that we had in Belfast somewhere. And like, I think like a few of the extras I was talking to that day were like, oh yeah, this is real, like, nightclub. So it was like not the most glamorous situation, but like out the back there was definitely like, you know, it was an alleyway behind a nightclub, let's just put it that way. But like the guys were so great. Like we had like crash mats down, like you kind of like don't even see that there's this crash mat covered with boxes and stuff like that for like a tiny fall. So it was grand.
it was very entertaining.
Did you get it done in the one take, or did you have to be dropped a few times?
I had to be dropped probably a few times.
You must have been black and blue.
And to be honest with you, it was so cold, and like, you know, you're out there, and like the guys are so lovely when you're filming, like they run in and put keep warms on you like the minute you're not shooting, but like once you're going, it's like, okay, take them off. And it was like very cold. It was kind of like a night like tonight. It was really, really cold, so you're kind of just like, okay, let's get through this, let's get this done.
It's so worth it. Thank you for that moment.
It brought us a lot of joy. And Aquiva, what
came out great grand, yeah.
What do you think is actually wrong with Rob's neck?
I don't know. Although one of you said, which I thought was hilarious, were you like, somebody said it was like being with Heather is like a form of punishment for him or something. What did one of you say?
And I like, he hated himself. Yeah.
Well, what, you had, you had a way, you had a way of putting it. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, neither can we.
It was like it's some form of like self harm or something, and I was like, I just like laughed so much when I heard it. I was like, yeah, that probably is true, actually.
That is so mean. I actually feel so bad saying that now to your face, even though you're not real Heather, but still, yeah. So bad.
Yeah, don't worry, it's not me. No, but I think actually it's like, it's, yeah, he was in a dark place. But no, I don't know. I don't know what the neck thing is. Did Sarah Phelps give you any answers to this? Yeah,
I think we actually forgot to ask her.
Yeah.
I think it's just like, I don't know, it must be like a trauma thing. It must be like a trauma thing. But Killian was like very funny, like backstage, like when we weren't shooting in the green room and stuff, because he had to do, I don't think he, on the edit that happened in the episode, but there was a like shot where he was walking through the nightclub a bit more with the neck, and Killian was very funny. He looked like he did Quasimodo at one point, so we
yeah,
got
guys,
him.
Yeah, I thought you were wetting yourselves at some point.
Like, I think you definitely have to try to make yourself laugh in between takes and stuff. So we were like, get up there, Killian, and do Quasimodo, which is, he's very good at, to be fair.
He was.
If he ever needs to play the role, I think he's got it, you know?
Amazing. Speaking of Sarah Phelps, she tweeted, and this is a quote, "The outrageously gifted and stunning Caoimhe O'Malley, there was a deranged scene which never made it into the cut, but holy shit, the comic timing of the woman is two fire emojis. Tell us about it."
I was actually, I knew you guys were going to ask this. Yeah. It was funny, I didn't know actually, it was lovely that Sarah said that she's like such an absolute legend. Like, I'm so in love with the woman. I think everybody who meets her and like knows her work is like, she's incredible. And we had a really funny scene that was meant to be in episode 3, and when I was at the premiere, which you guys were at actually, and yeah. I never got yes. to see it. So like, I didn't know the podcast before now, but like, I'll know it now. So no, it would have been lovely to say hello to you guys. But yeah, at the premiere, we saw episode 1 obviously, and Sarah did say to me, like, I think Sarah and one of the producer, Kate, said to me that, like, you know, one of the scenes didn't make it in. So this was a really funny, like, I loved it when I read it, and it is bonkers. I think Sarah will say that herself. But basically the story is that Rob came home one night, and he enters, I feel like I should do it like almost the way you guys do it, a breakdown episode.
Go on.
Yeah, we're loving this. You're the fourth member.
You're like, okay, episode 5, and this is what happened. I love this. Rob, it was so funny. I feel like I could do each one of your voices, but basically Rob comes in the door. He comes in the door to the sounds of Heather moaning and having sex, and he walks through the door, and Heather has brought a gentleman caller, shall we say, home. They're having sex on the kitchen countertop. Oh. And Heather looks to Rob and like wants to see his reaction. And basically the guy she's having sex with sees Rob and is like, what the hell is going on? Who is this guy? And I'm like, oh, keep going. You're grand. Don't worry about it. So it was a bit of a play between the two of them. I think Heather was expecting a reaction from Rob. And of course, Rob being Rob, he didn't react at all. One. And proceeded to make a sandwich while
no! How can we get this footage?
We need to see this.
I haven't actually seen it. So, I mean, it was really funny on the page. It was really, like, you had to laugh when we were shooting it. And so basically Heather keeps going with it. and this poor guy. Actually, he plays like Adam is his name, and he was in the nightclub. You got to see him a little bit.
Another
was
Adam.
With him.
Oh, you were dancing with him, and then Rob came down and stole you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So his real name is Adam. So
very confusing.
Brady, I know. And so he's the guy that I brought home from the nightclub, like before the nightclub. And basically, Rob proceeds to make a sandwich, and then I end up getting into a heated debate with him about like how he's toxic and he's a mess, and Rob just is really having nothing of Heather. This poor guy is in like absolute bollock naked and he's like, what the hell is going on? And so it was kind of a scene between Rob and Heather. It was just a bit of a kind of a power play thing, and then Rob just walks out. Heather doesn't know what to say, and just calls him an arsehole.
Amazing.
I hope it's on the DVD extra.
Yeah, we need to see it.
And Cuevan, what's next for you? What are you working on at the minute?
So I just filmed, finished shooting an RTE TV series called Southwesterlies, which is going to be out next year at some point. So it's a comedy, so a little bit different from Dublin Murders, but hopefully, it's as successful.
Brilliant. We will keep an eye out for that. And thank you so much for chatting to us and listening to our absolute shite talk.
Drivel.
Oh my God. Drivel. Honestly, I've loved it. You guys are so funny. And the one thing that I love so much about you guys, it's like listening to just a friend, like just chat, you know, and just the descriptions you put on things. And like, even when you were up one night and you didn't know that it was back on at the normal time.
It was very
entertaining.
Of my life. Cuevan, thank you so much. You're
thank
wonderful.
You.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye. I swear on my life, we did not ask people to say these things.
No.
Give me that scene. Hook it to my veins.
I need to see that scene. Why would you cut that?
Even if it's the social media team for Dublin Murders are brilliant, I'm like, if you're listening, can you please tweet out that scene?
Yeah. That is somewhere.
The DVD box set. Director's cut. Give it to us.
We'll pay for it.
Yeah, I want to see it.
The making a sandwich. I actually think I'd have tears in my eyes. Yeah. That sounds so funny. Oh. But we all know a couple that play off each other like that. Do you know what I mean? I just think that's brilliant.
Don't mind him. Keep going.
It's like when you're 15 and you fancy a fella and you score his friend and you think he's going to fancy you, but they're like, get away from me. You score my friend.
But yeah, when you apply that onto being like in your 30s and living together and having an active sex life like that, then that's what happens.
I wish it made the cut.
I also don't think having a ride on the kitchen counter would necessarily be a Heather thing. She's quite a tidy, clean person.
No, she was waiting. It was a parade for Rob coming in.
I'd say
she got the Dettol out afterwards, like scrubbing the tiles.
The second she heard about the door, she's like, right, come on, let's go.
Action.
Guys, what a brilliant way to wrap up a show about murder.
Oh, guys, I can't believe that it's over. What are we going to do now?
That was your post-mortem.
Yeah. It was, honestly,
whirlwind.
I feel like we do have a few more answers than we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Even if it's just people's, you know,
it came hypothetically in, it took over our lives for 4 weeks, and now, whoosh, just like that, it's gone.
Gone.
I also just want to say thanks so much to everyone who listened over the last few weeks, because the episodes were long.
They were so long.
They were
so
detailed.
Sorry.
Convoluted.
Yeah, we loved when people sent in their theories as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everyone on social media as well, Twitter especially, people are so nice, so engaged, and it's all people just having the crack. Like, it's brilliant. So let's continue to do that. Let us know what you're watching next.
Yes, let us know what you're watching over Christmas, what's going to be keeping you lit during the cold. I wrote that down earlier on, keeping you lit.
so we're saying it twice.
I wrote over Christmas.
Next line.
Next line. Get in touch on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ShrinePod over the Christmas break. We'll be lonely this Christmas. Or email shrinepod@gmail.com.
We're
going to
wheel her out now.
We are going to be back in the new year dissecting Marcella season 3. There's loads of other bits
on my radar now.
Yeah.
Few Martin Compton popping up left, right and centre.
Yes.
Two dramas in a few things at one time.
Brendan, you sent me an article. I still haven't read it. I
think it's a Radio Times article. All the dramas coming in 2020.
For a bloody radio station, they write great TV content, but it's all the dramas coming in.
Are they a radio station?
Well, they kind of are about radio, are they not?
Is it not an offshoot of the BBC, no?
I don't know.
Do you know what? I haven't a clue what I'm talking about.
We'll find that out.
Is that surprising?
We'll find that out, guys.
I'm going to read that article. We're going to do Marcella, and I think there's going to be some others as well. Line of Duty, Potench.
Hopefully, yeah. They said that it will be the Q4 of 2020.
Like, that's going to come around faster than we thought it was going to.
Guys, if I'm that happens. You.
But he's writing so much other stuff at the moment. Where does the Bloodlands band find the time?
Bloodlands as well.
Yeah. Bloodlands.
Bodyguard, that's going to have to...
That's going on the back burner.
See, Richard Madden's doing Marvel. Is he doing Marvel?
Marvel?
Yeah, so that's...
He's in the Eternals.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. That's a bit of Nessa.
Oh, my love.
Gavin and
If you think of anything else, Mad, that we should watch, let us know. We were also going to watch Gavin and Stacey. I mean, will we do a podcast about Gavin and Stacey? Who knows?
It is 1,000 degrees in here.
Let's get out. But really quickly, I can't believe that we started Line of Duty this year. It feels like we did it a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
We also did Big Little Lies Season 2. Not a show that warranted a podcast, but we somehow managed to talk about it.
Not a show that, as far as I'm concerned, warrants a third season, but that's happening.
Yes.
Jennifer Aniston, what?
And that is a season that is not warranting a podcast.
No, it's not happening.
If there's no murder, we're not interested, really.
But what I did want to say was thank you. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah, happy
Christmas.
Happy
New Year. And we'll see you in 2020. Unless something awful happens, I'll have to come back on and update you really quickly. But
exactly. Or if some weird show comes on, we might just pop up. You know yourself.
There are two Martin Compsons are in December, but I think we need a break.
God, lads, we'll be flat out.
Flat out.
Two episodes a week for the last 4 weeks. I
can't
cope
vodka.
Anymore.
I can't remember what it's like to have a weekday evening off, to be honest. So we'll see you in the new year. Gap binging on Marcella. She's on Netflix.
Yes, 1 and 2 are both on Netflix.
I'm off for a Bailey's.
Go on.
Vegan, of course.
Brendan.
This is TV Worth Talking About. So we want to hear what you have to say. Find Shrine Podcasts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ShrinePod.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.